This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This is the big week for season finales on TV. Meanwhile, the networks and sponsors are looking ahead to the new season. So are the TV critics, including our own David Bianculli, who is also the TV critic for the New York Daily News. We're going to talk about changes at the TV networks and new programs getting ready to premiere. David just attended something called the Upfronts, at which the networks unveil their fall schedules to advertisers. Later in the show, our critic-at-large John Powers will tell us about some of the movies he saw at the Cannes Film Festival, which ended over the weekend. Well, David, while our critic-at-large John Powers was in France at the Cannes Film Festival watching all the exciting new movies that will probably be heading our way soon, you were at an industry conference in New York seeing and doing what?
I was running through the Dog and Pony Show, where all of the networks unveil their season schedules for the fall. And there are some critics that are invited there, and there are some reporters. But mostly, it's to the advertising buyers who are going to throw billions of dollars towards these six networks. And they're all competing, like, buy my show, buy my network, don't buy theirs. It's not quite being on the beach in France.
So what do they do? What do the networks do to try to convince the sponsors at this conference to buy spots on their shows?
Well, the first thing they do is they try to pick programming that's going to appeal not only to the viewers but to the advertisers, because it is an advertising medium. The second thing they try to do is to put the best face possible on whatever horrible things happened to them the previous year.
And
to say, it's sort of like NBC for years has ruled the 18 to 34 demographic, for example, and made this a huge deal. This is the only group we're interested in, 18 to 34. Well, this past season, they went from first in the 18 to 34 grouping to fourth, which is like a major tumble. You have to pass lots of networks. You know, the only things beneath them now are UPN and WB, which hardly count as networks. So what they're now saying is, we're number one with the upscale 18 to 34 households that spend more than $100,000. So they just try to make it as good as they can. But of course, another thing they do is the rival networks make fun of everybody else. And so they point out these things. So by the time the advertisers have gone to all six upfronts, they pretty much know who's weak and who's strong based on last year, and then they make up their own minds based on these little 1 minute, 90-second cutdowns of the pilots that have been chosen for the new season as to what they're excited about.
Do the advertisers want to invest as much money in network programs as they used to, given the amount of competition with cable, the internet, TiVo? A lot of people are TiVoing their shows, mm-hmm. and not even bothering to watch the ads anymore.
No, it's a great question. There is sort of like, if you have enough money to invest and you're supposed to diversify your portfolio, there is more diversification where advertising groups or individual advertisers will target cable. You know, you can reach a lot of young moviegoers, for example, which is a huge market. So all of Hollywood wants to buy for the young 18 to 34s who are deciding on Thursdays what to do the next night. And for that, even though you can advertise on Comedy Central, you can advertise on MTV, the biggest buy is still the mass medium of television. So they still do want to go there. But right now, Thursday night, for example, accounts for 40% of all the advertising revenues in primetime, which is why the Thursday night, which used to be owned by NBC and now is totally up for grabs, is so fought over.
So are the networks moving in their big shows to Thursday nights now?
Yeah, more and more. I mean, CBS started it a few seasons ago by bringing Survivor in, and then that worked. And then Fox brought in The OC, which went for the really young demographic. And with Joey underperforming once Friends left and The Apprentice being a little weaker this year, for this fall it's going to be a six-way battle, including UPN, which had its first, I think, real serious cult hit last year with Veronica Mars, is putting on what, based on little cutdowns, is, I think, one of the two best new shows of the year.
Did you see anything in the cutdowns that allows you to actually speculate what the new season might be like or what individual programs might be like?
It's really tricky. It's like pre-first impressions when you see these cutdowns. I mean, one of the things that you can tell when you're at the upfronts, because these things are held at various New York venues, one's at Carnegie Hall, you know, one's at Radio City Music Hall. So you have, you know, 1,000 people there. And if they show a new program clip and afterward it's as though they've attended a funeral, You get a really good sense that this is going to be a hard sell and probably a bad show. But you don't really – you can't tell with a lot of the creative shows from 90 seconds whether it's good. For example, at last year's Upfront, they showed the entire pilot NBC did of Joey, because this was so important because of Thursday, because of friends leaving. And the pilot for Joey actually was a good pilot. But the remaining 21 episodes the rest of the year just were dreadful. So that was fooled in one way. But it wasn't until about a week after the upfronts, like next week, this week, I will be getting the tapes, the full pilots from all six networks. And when you sit down and you start going through those, that's when last year Lost and Desperate Housewives popped out. You know, there wasn't a lot of buzz after the upfronts, but about a week or two later when critics began seeing them and started writing about them in advance, and then when the Television Critics Press Tour happened in July, that's when, you know, these are the new shows to watch. But yes, there are a couple that you can tell early look interesting.
What would those couple be?
NBC has one called My Name is Earl, which stars Jason Lee, who was, you know, the rock star in Almost Famous, and he's been a really interesting actor with some good choices for years. This is the first time he's done TV. And to me, it plays like a Coen Brothers comedy made for television. It's that offbeat just in even the little 2 minutes we saw. And then the other one, just as CBS loses Everybody Loves Raymond, UPN picks up a show called Everybody Hates Chris, which is Chris Rock's childhood, where he was bused to an otherwise all-white school. And so it's the Wonder Years, a half a generation later, the childhood of Chris Rock, who narrates.
That sounds great.
It is great. And the cutdown had a better response and more laughter than anything else shown. So the question is, number one, is the pilot going to be as good? Probably yes. And then are future episodes are going to be as good? And that we don't know.
Did Chris Rock write the series?
He co-wrote the pilot. I don't know. The question is exactly what you're asking.
How much involvement? Is it a Chris Rock franchise, or is he involved?
Yes. How much involvement will he have? And we won't know that until he gets into it. But it could be that he'll be so excited by this form that he'll want to keep it true to himself. I don't know.
So what's the general shape of next season's TV season?
It's fairly encouraging, because what happened this year, Desperate Housewives came out of the box so strong and Lost came out of the box so strong that those two ABC shows basically single-handedly reversed the course of network television. And to that I say hallelujah, because reality shows, which were getting more and more dominant, sort of faltered last year. And scripted programs written by writers, performed by actors, the old-fashioned stuff, did so well that now the networks, who are so greedy and short-sighted and stupid and always want to chase whatever is successful, are all chasing that. Now, the lesson they never seem to learn is that the reason Desperate Housewives worked is because there was nothing like it on TV. The reason Lost worked is because there was nothing like it on TV. So putting more Losts and Desperate Housewives on next year, those won't be hits. We need something that's not on now, something that's not working now. And that's why both, you know, My Name is Earl and Everybody Hates Chris have a shot. But it is a great thing. The most amazing statistic for me is that 2 years ago, there were 5 or 6 reality shows on the fall schedule. Last year, there were 21. And this coming fall, it's back to 14. That is a huge victory. And there are more comedies on than there were the year before and more dramas. Just a small number, but still, you know, I thought that was a horrible slide that we weren't going to be able to correct.
My guest is our TV critic, David Bianculli. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is our TV critic, David Bianculli. As current programs present their season finales and the networks prepare for the new season, we're talking about how the TV landscape is changing. What are some of the other big stories about this past season regarding, you know, the shape of television now?
One, it didn't occur in primetime. It's occurring in the news with all the big stalwarts in terms of the evening news. Tom Brokaw retires. Don Hewitt leaves 60 Minutes running that helm. Dan Rather steps away after the controversy. Peter Jennings is very ill right now. Ted Koppel at Nightline is about to go. You know, that's not just a sea change. That's a tsunami. These are guys that have been around for 30 years and have had those jobs for that long, 20, 30 years. And presto, nobody knows what's going to happen next. CBS is trying to change it and maybe bring some more entertainment into the mix of the evening news. But on all three networks, viewership is down by a couple million from a few years ago. And the trend is definitely that younger people are not watching the evening news as much. So, but it's still a big mass medium that attracts more than, you know, anybody else. Even the worst rated network news gets millions more than Fox News or CNN.
Dan Rather was very controversial on the right, mm-hmm. even before the
Memogate.
The Memogate thing, right. Do you get the impression that anybody in network news now is afraid of being controversial, afraid that they will be accused of being liberal, of being elite, of being, you know, any of the things that news people are being accused of right now?
I think so. I think that there's a timidity out there. There's an eagerness to please, and what I think is probably the most dangerous inclination of all. There's an eagerness to give viewers what they want. And so everything is being shaped. More and more of the newscasts are being shaped as news you want to know rather than things you ought to know. Or maybe you're, you know, Nightline, you know, it'll do 2 and 3 days on the Congo. And that's not showing up in prime time. And why not? And the newscasts, I think, to try and attract the younger viewers, may repel some of the viewers they have, not attract the young viewers anyway, and just hasten their own slide into inconsequentiality.
The 60 Minutes Wednesday edition was canceled.
Right.
The network says because it's low ratings, some media critics are speculating, is it really because of the Dan Rather controversy and the story, the Memogate story that was broken on 60 Minutes? What's the inside story? Do you know?
Well, on this one, I do believe the raw numbers really were bad for that edition. And while I don't see a conspiracy, I do see a real nice side benefit because I don't see a lot of love lost between Leslie Moonves, who runs CBS, and Dan Rather. And Dan Rather had it in his contract that when he stepped away as anchor of the CBS Evening News, that he could be a regular correspondent on 60 Minutes Wednesday. It was specific to that program. When that program is no longer there, it doesn't automatically shift over to 60 Minutes. And we asked him in a press briefing last week how involved Rather was going to be in 60 Minutes and whether he was going to be assigned as managing editor. And Leslie said he doubted very much that Dan Rather would be assigned as managing editor of 60 Minutes. Now, most of the people in this position, when you get that high up in a network, they don't say anything at all unless they have to. So the fact that he volunteered a negative, I think, is a real good indication that there is a lot of bad blood or at least memory there at CBS.
FX, which is a Fox cable network, seems to be doing really well now with really a few really dynamic programs. You've got The Shield, which is a cop show, mm-hmm. and Glenn Close is a regular in the series now. You've got Dennis Leary in a show called Rescue Me, which is a drama with elements of comedy, mm-hmm. and he plays a post-September 11th fireman with family issues and all kinds of issues. And then there's a new Steve Bochco show that's going to be starting on FX that has to do with the Iraq War. How did FX become such a force?
They stole HBO's playbook. What HBO did while programming almost no other nights in terms of original programming, targeted Sunday night, and, you know, it rolled out The Sopranos, it had Sex and the City. Whenever one show ended, another show was there, and so viewers began to think of Sunday night as an HBO place to go. What FX did was it started Tuesday, and it started with The Shield and got a lot of attention because of how raw that character was and how violent and how loose cannony it was for basic cable. The following year, they came back with Nip Tuck, the show about surgeons that very well received, just as edgy. And then the following year, Rescue Me. So 3 years, three shows, all on Tuesday. And so when one ends, another one comes in. And so they've only really programmed 3 hours so far. But they're three for three. They're all in a place where you know where they are. And there is a synergy that builds. And so Bochco's program is going to join that. I think FX has been brilliant.
Let's look at Comedy Central for a second.
Okay.
The Daily Show with Jon Stewart has really become a cultural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like so many people watch it, and it's actually very influential now. I think it's fair to say it. I don't think it's determining elections or anything, but
it is shaping the very young viewers that the networks do not know how to reach. Do not know how to reach for news in particular. It's not only reaching them, but it's teaching them. I think it's a brilliant show, and not just about politics. It does media deconstruction, which the networks just don't do.
And The Daily Show's foremost fake news correspondent, Stephen Colbert, is getting his own show.
Yes.
Starting
later, I think in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
September, I believe. I'm not exactly sure, but I seem to think it's a September launch. And that's going to basically just make Comedy Central an hour long in terms of The Daily Show block. It's a perfect idea. He's going to be sort of like a comic Bill O'Reilly, if that's not a redundancy.
And meanwhile, Dave Chappelle has been missing in action.
Yes.
And his show is on hiatus.
And his new DVD, which just comes out for the second season, is probably going to be the most popular DVD release of a TV show ever. Because as astounding as that sounds, his first season was. This caught everybody by surprise and is what made David Chappelle sign a $50 million contract for Comedy Central. They realized there are more people buying his show than I think there were watching his show. And that's an incredible phenomenon. The whole DVD idea has changed TV in the last few years. Family Guy is back on Fox. They're registering the aftermarket and giving it a factor in terms of what shows are canceled or renewed. And this is, you know, Dave Chappelle is a big force. And his show really is not only funny but edgy in a way that less and less of TV is these days.
David, as we've been sitting here talking about television, all I can really think about is the fact that when you started as a TV critic, there were basically three networks and a few UHF stations, and that was the menu of programs you had to write about. And with the proliferation of cable stations and more broadcast channels, how are you possibly expected to actually keep track of what's on television and keep watching series as they continue?
It's
not possible.
It is not. This is how stupid I am. When I started off in college to try to plan to be a critic, and I actually had at the local newspaper there a movie column and a TV column running at the same time, and I actually could choose whether I wanted to be a movie critic or a TV critic. I chose television because I figured you had 50 years less history to have to know about, so it would be easier. I didn't think that you would have, 8,000 channels and all these new technologies, and you would have to worry about, current events, and every time there's a war or any big thing, that's also TV. I mean, Roger Ebert doesn't get called up at 3 a.m. because they've just invaded somebody. And, it's just a weird thing. It is a completely different medium than it was when I started. Because I've been doing this 30 years now, and I don't like to say very often. But the core of it is still the same. I still love the medium when it's good, and even though it's lost a lot of its audience, it still reaches more than any other mass medium. And at times of genuine crisis, it is still the first thing that brings everybody together. It's a fascinating tool, even if it's more misused than ever and more misused than not.
Well, David, really good to talk with you. Thanks.
Oh, thanks a lot. This is fun. This is easier than actually writing stuff.
David Bianculli is our TV critic and TV critic for the New York Daily News. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.